Developers, 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 developers. Yes!
Hello, and welcome to the Static Void Podcast. I'm Jess Chadwick.
I'm Todd Slater.
And I'm Chris Gomez.
And we are your hosts. We're recording this on the evening of December 19th, 2017. And tonight we're going to talk about the Git source control system. This is a topic that we've touched on a few times in a couple of the other episodes, and we thought it was about time that we just kind of jump into it and talk about how we use it in the real world and some of the problems we've seen and some of the problems that we've had ourselves. So I know, Chris, you've been talking about this a lot lately. Do you want to kick us off?
Yeah, I think Git has been a real anachronism, right? Because everyone is switching to it, and yet I see a lot of complaining about actually trying to use it from day to day. Yeah. Especially, I think people who are experienced in the industry coming from Subversion or TFS or just anything else, they come to Git, and it tricks you into thinking that it's extremely similar, but the little nuances trip people up. And then they start complaining about how, you know, I totally messed up my Git repo and I don't know what I've done. And so there's even a pretty funny comic strip out there, an XKCD comic, where the developer is introducing it to another developer and says, hey, this is Git. You know, it's really great. And you get your own repo and your own repository. And the other developer says, well, how do you use it? And so I have no idea. Just every once in a while, you blow the whole thing away and start over. And unfortunately, everyone laughs at that, right? Because it's unfortunately way too common.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a couple things that I do when I start talking about Git to other people is I actually have tried to impress upon them on how it works, the innards of it work, including the commits and what they point to, and dispel a couple myths about it. So let me start off with a myth number one, and I'm just curious, you know, be curious to see if you guys know, is so every commit in Git gets a hash, and that hash is not made up. It's based on the contents of the commit and the header information. So it turns out that all of Git is a content addressable file system, essentially. You can figure out what hash would be generated for a certain amount of content just by hashing that content the same way Git does.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people look at it as like just something that's randomly generated, and it's not. So I think that the first thing that leads you to is that it turns out every commit in Git is actually mutable, right? Like it's changing anything about that commit would change the hash. And
there's a big thing about rewriting history, right? So you have these conflicting ideas of immutable commits, but the ability to rewrite history. And
yeah, so it's an anachronism about Git, right? Is that on the one hand, commits themselves are completely immutable, yet you can rewrite history however you want. You have complete control.
Yeah.
And that scares the heck out of a lot of people, right? Just that absolutely hate that about it.
Yeah. And part of that header information is the parent commit, right? That you are committing against. And so if you rewrite history, then you're actually rewriting that hash and each one subsequent to that, because then the parent has been changed, right?
Right.
Yeah, I think just to kind of back it up a little bit, when we're talking about people just learning it and getting to use it, and especially coming from backgrounds from any kind of centralized source control system like TFS in the .NET world primarily, TFS and Subversion, CVS, I try to pitch it to them as, here, look, it is just like what you're used to. You're still committing. You're still, you know, getting latest. You're still pulling and everything. You're still going to have merge conflicts. You know, it's not going to make them go away. That there's no source control system in the world that's just going to make those go away. But you just have to have the idea that everything is local until you sync, right? So if you make any changes locally, you have to push them And then, you know, in order to get other people's changes that have been pushed that are on the central server, you need to pull them and possibly resolve them locally. And I find that that tends to be oversimplified, right? Because when people start really getting into it, then they say, well, what about this? What about that? What about rebasing? What about,
right,
you know, this rewriting thing? And there's so much power and functionality there. And I try to explain to people, you can just ignore that. You can just ignore that. You can just use it as just like you do with TFS and Subversion today, with just your simple commit, you know, create a commit message. And then that didn't go to the server directly as it would in Subversion or TFS. So now you have to push. So instead of commit, it's commit and push. Have you guys tried that approach? Is that how you kind of tell other people about it? And how has that worked for you and or them? Just that idea, that approach.
Yeah, the idea that, like, just use it like you did your old system.
Yeah.
It works.
Do you find that as helpful or unhelpful?
I think that you run into a stumbling block in the first couple weeks. And here's what it is. Developer A and developer B, let's just say they grab a repo at the same spot in time. And then they both go to work. So a couple commits here, a couple commits there. One of them pushes, the other one is going to feel completely screwed. You don't know what to do, because Git's going to tell you when they try to push, well, wait a second, you know, you're missing two commits from the branch. And I'm not even talking about branching yet.
Yeah.
And so their instinct is, well, I don't know what to do. I guess I'll just pull them. And what'll probably happen, if you can even get that to happen, is Git might decide, okay, well, I need to create like a merge commit to bring together what's happened here. And then you push that. Well, now the other person doesn't have that merge commit and they've continued working. And so you end up in this place where both developers just get really frustrated. And I think that's what leads to, well, I guess I just have to blow my repo away. And I've even seen developers start doing this. They get so afraid of Git that I've seen the situation where, they're just zipping up their source code all the time because they feel like, I'm just going to have to blow all this away. So I've got to save my work somewhere else. Well, and yeah. Now you know you've really gone off the rails. Yeah.
Yeah.
You might as well not use source control at all. You're back to like,
so how do you avoid
that? Latest and today and tomorrow.
How do you avoid that?
I think, unfortunately, even if you branch, you're going to run into a problem because... So then what most teams do is they say, okay, well, then let's have feature branches. Jess, you work on feature A. Todd, you work on feature B. Oh, we've solved the problem. Okay, well.
Isolated problem. I don't think you're solving it.
No, feature A gets finished first. And so what happens? You merge it into master. So master looks at that merge series of commits, and it's like, oh, I've got no problem with that because I can walk the graph back, it's nice and clean, great. But developer B says, okay, well, now I'm ready to merge into master. And what's Git going to say at that point? Hold on a second, you're missing some commits. And the instinct of every developer will be, well, then I need to pull master into my feature branch. Git merge master, which I want to just tell everybody right now, if you ever start typing that, stop. That you shouldn't do it. I firmly believe you absolutely should not merge from master to your branch. Because what happens is you've got to go create a merge commit just to bring those two things together, and then you're going to push that back onto master. And forever and ever, your commit graph will look funny, and then it'll just get fatter and fatter and weird.
Yeah.
And it's funny, I'm talking about a commit graph, and that's unfamiliar to a lot of people too.
Yeah, because, yeah. I was going to say, we're diving down the rabbit hole already.
Well, I think most people sit at the command line and they look at Git log or they look at the GitHub log. And that's not the way I like to view a repository.
So let's take a quick step back.
Yeah.
Number one, you brought up a something that sounded on paper. Yeah, like it makes perfect sense. Master is master. You don't want to merge yourself back. So how do you solve that problem? What is the solution? I want to now take my stuff and I want to merge it into master. What is the solution to that?
Well, so here's where the controversy begins, right? Is the problem is if you have to, is if you, it's not that you want to merge your stuff into master, it's the idea of saying master has moved on without me, so I need to bring those commits into my feature branch. Well, why do you have to do that? Because I want to keep working. And when you bring it back into this direction, when you go from master into your feature branch, now the problem is you've got to come back at some point. And the big trick about Git is that Git, a commit points to parents, and Git will never change that. So once you start saying, okay, well, I've started this line of commits and I've started this other line of commits, but now I'm going to grab a few of yours, but I'm going to, and then I'm going to keep working, that backwards pointing all gets pointed out. And that's why, like, looking at the log doesn't help you. You need a graph. You need a visual representation. And so,
I agree with you from a better understanding of Git. So the one reason I want to take a step back is, so we recently switched over from TFS to Git. We have quite a few developers, and on the surface, it feels like the approach we're taking is just using it like TFS. We're not gaining anything for switching. And that's really the question I want to get at is, Git's now been around, almost more than 5 years, probably 7 or 8 years.
A lot longer.
And why are people going to this? What is the motivation to use Git? Because from my point of view, what we're doing now, we lost stuff. We lost the tooling that TFS and stuff gave, because we're actually still using TFS as the repository. So we're not gaining anything. And to me, that's the more important thing. This whole idea of distributed stuff, I think for most teams, is overkill.
Right.
Most people need that centralized. That's how they have a team of 20, 30 developers. What's centralized is what's getting built. This whole idea of distributed, to me, works in maybe certain scenarios, but in the typical enterprise scenario, I feels like we're using a new tool, not understanding fully what it's used for or what it's good for, because it's cool and not necessarily it's the right tool for what we're trying to do.
I think you're absolutely right. And that's an unfortunate statement to make, right? GitHub got really, really big. Companies like Microsoft have switched to Git, pushing it in the tooling. So now the problem is everyone feels like you have to go to it. But if you don't fully understand and respect the ideas behind it, then you're actually going to fight it. And maybe TFS, you didn't fight because TFS would handle merging for you in a centralized manner. It would say, okay, I can manage your merge, these three files you've given me. Even though you don't know about some stuff that's changed, I'm looking at what you've done. I don't see any conflicts, so I'm going to just deal with that. Now, Git will do that as well through the use of an automated merge commit. It's just that once you get through a few iterations of this feature got merged in, and then this one got merged in, and then this one got merged in, eventually somebody is going to say, well, I need what's going on in master, and they're going to do the Git merge master and pull back to their feature branch. And so then what happens is you have Git folks like myself start talking about rebasing, and to Jess's point at the very beginning, heads explode, brains start coming out. It doesn't make sense. Why are you doing this? This is too hard. I give up. This is stupid.
So
you're not going to get an argument from me.
So you brought up rebase, and this is sort of how we are currently using it. And I feel like we haven't gained anything by doing this. Basically, this is my process when I want to check something in. And we actually have several different repositories. Like I said, several dozen programmers are all checking things in. We have other things checking things in too. I have code. I want to check it in, right? Before I check it in, I have to get latest. So the first thing I need to do is stash my stuff in order to get anywhere. Then I...
Well, hold on.
Let me finish.
I'm going to stop you right there because you don't need to stash anything if you don't have any changes. Why are you trying to get other people's changes into your repository if you have outstanding changes?
Let's reset what a stash is, okay? So stash and Git is... being a TFS user, I understand why you gravitated to stash, which is fine. Not criticizing you.
It's what works.
So a stash is I've got some working changes, but I know that I can't simply just pull in what's happened since the last time I've checked in, since the last time I've committed, because I've got a bunch of junk I've done. So I'm going to stash my work. Right? You Git basically takes it and from your point of view puts it aside. In TFS, this is called shelving, right?
Yes.
And then you can bring work back down, and then you can you pop from the stash.
Yeah.
So anyway, let's. So what are you doing? Right, you stash and then you get the latest.
But when we get latest, we're rebasing.
Yeah. Okay.
Every time. And then I reapply for my stash. Right. If there's no merge conflicts, it works perfectly. If there's merge conflicts, it seems to get a little bit hairy. And the reason why we're doing this is so we used to commit, and then you would sync it. But the way our system works, we have enough people touching files, the merges end up getting very confused.
Yeah.
So it's actually easier to handle the merge before you commit to your local repository. Mm-hmm. Which to me, then you're losing some of the power of Git, because the idea of Git is I'm constantly checking into my local repository. I could say, hey, team member X, you and I could share this. We could work on this stuff externally from the central part.
Right.
Again, I've reached a point now where I feel like we're just using this tool because it's cool and not because it actually solves any engineering principle.
It does. It makes branching easier. And that makes a lot of other things easier. And so the reason I just jumped on you just now is because I was pointing out that you're not using branching. First of all, you have the stashing means that you're saving outstanding changes that you haven't actually committed yet.
Yes,
so that's my big question is why haven't you committed them? Right? Why in the middle of working? In other words, when you have outstanding changes on your local machine and you have not committed them, you're literally saying, I'm in the middle of work, but I'm going to stop and I'm trying to get something that somebody else has pushed recently and try and merge that in my ongoing work. That just doesn't make sense right there, just as a process. Forget about it.
Okay. So let's talk about the process. So I've made changes, right? I now want to check it into the centralized repository.
Right.
So it goes out to the build and out to use.
Well, hold on. I mean, we're talking about the local repository now, right? You've made changes.
Remember, we're using like TFS. The central repository is where all the building's happening, right? Okay, we're not even using master. We've created something called develop. So we're not touching master. That's someone else doing that. We're just checking into a local branch we call develop. Not local. Centralized server branch called develop.
You're using Git flow, which we'll get to later, or no?
We're actually using SourceTree.
Okay.
No, but GitFlow.
No, we'll get to that. We'll get to that later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're using the tool we're using is SourceTree. So,
right.
Which is just, I mean, that's just an idea and something special.
Sure, right. Sure.
The process we've all adopted based on to avoid the more merge conflicts is you do your work, you stash or do whatever you want to it. If you don't have merge conflict, then it's not a problem. You could check it in first. And then you commit your changes up to the central hub. Ideally for me, I'm doing it every day or two.
Okay, so you keep using the term stash. I don't know. Yeah. I don't think that means what you think it means.
No, stash is basically how the hell you work around this kick-ass. This tool was worthless, in my opinion. It's a piece of crap.
Hold on. That's what I'm trying to point out is you might be using it wrong.
I definitely think we were using it wrong.
I don't like SourceTree. I guess what I mean is SourceTree is not my tool of choice. But the fact of the matter is,
I'm not talking about SourceTree. Everything you're describing
is just a Git command, Git stash, right?
Yeah. That's a different thing. I'm describing a flow. Okay.
Yep.
And it's not to me. There's no advantage using Git. we've until you take advantage of it, it seems like it gets in the way.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
So the first place that I would go is that I challenge every developer to never, ever use the stash command ever, ever, ever. Yeah. I don't like it.
Yeah.
I think that it causes confusion. What I would do instead is I would commit on my own branch, my own local branch. I don't care what it's called. I don't care if it's called coffee. It doesn't matter. That's not important to me.
Yeah.
And the reason why is because then I can go fetch and pull the branch that I actually do care about, the one that is the one that I really do want to commit to. Right. And when I find out, oh wow, there's been three commits since I started working, then I have to ask myself a question. And the question is the work that I've started on, if I had a time machine and I could somehow change time so that I started on that work after the current state of where I'm committing to. In most cases, that's master, but I understand in your case, it's develop. Doesn't matter.
Whatever.
If I had a time machine and I could somehow start the work after that work was completed, would I be okay with that? And if the answer is yes, then that's where I would rebase and say, I'm going to replay my commits on top of the latest develop so that they appear as if they started after, and then the merge will be a fast forward merge, which is a very clean merge. It just Git just looks at that and goes, "Oh, your commits are direct descendants of what I already have." Okay, boop boop boop, and it just and it's super clean, and your history looks nice and clean. You don't have a merge commit that no one understands what it's for, and it doesn't. And a merge commits almost always have terrible names like merge number 11 They don't say anything. They don't. Nobody goes. Nobody ever bothers to change the commit message on a merge commit so that it's meaningful.
So let me ask the question then, because then see if I understand this correctly. So technically, what I should be doing is I'm going to clone my original branch from the centralized server. I should then create my own local branch separate from that, which is where I should be working. Call X. Making my changes there. I can then get from the central branch to this clone, and then I can merge between the two of them.
Well, basically what you do is you want to leave the central branch, and I understand that term. You want to leave the branch that's important, the one that gets developed on. You just want to leave it alone.
Right. And that's the difference. You're going from merging to just replaying, right?
Yeah. Right.
And that is the term that they use. It's literally the term that spits out in the console when you do this, is that you can base your changes that you're making on this new branch off of that original branch. Let's call it master, call it develop, whatever it is. And so you start changing that branch. And if you were doing that directly, if you were making those commits directly to that branch, to the develop branch, then whenever somebody else made changes, now that's a conflict and you have to merge them, the literal merge, right?
Okay.
But if you are making them in a separate branch, in almost all the cases, you can take that pointer that was, you started here and you started working off this way, right? You branched off, you had another couple of commits, and in parallel, somebody else is making some commits. Right. Rather than trying to merge those things together, you instead take this pointer and jump it all the way to the end. That original pointer where you branched off and jump it all the way to the end. I'm on the video stream using my hands
Right. Okay, so walk me through this then.
Point is for the audio listeners, you're taking that original pointer that had branched off at one point in time, and you're just pointing it to the current point in time. Right.
Okay,
and so, from there, then you're replaying all of your changes.
So from a developer point of view, how do you do that?
Okay, so the developer point of view is let's just say you've got nothing. So you git clone, right?
Yes.
You git clone. Now you have your own repository, which is a copy of what's in the central golden server. And listen, for everything we say about Git being a distributed version control system, at some point a team has to designate a server as the central place, right? Because it's going to be where you build out a team city, or it's where you produce your packages, or whatever. So, you know, kind of a funny thing I think about Git. So I've done a Git clone now, and I've got the repo. And I'm just going to, for just to keep it simple, the branch that matters, so to speak, is master. That's the branch that matters.
Okay.
So I'm going to do some work now. I'm going to add a fire hydrant to this.
Okay.
To this app. So what I'm going to do is here's the trick. I actually don't have to branch right away, but I will. I'll go ahead and say, I'm going to do a git branch fire hydrant, so that way I have a branch that's pointing to the same commit that master is on.
Okay.
And so if we want to talk a little bit about how branches are just post-it notes that you move around the tree, we can do that. I think, unfortunately, if you think of them like TFS or subversion branches, you're going to get confused.
Right.
So now I have this new branch and I can work in there. I can commit as many times as I want, once, twice, three times, four times.
And that branch is just local right now, right? That's just your branch local branch. Local.
Yep, it's just local. So the reason why I want to do that is because I know that it's very likely my team is moving on in master.
Yes.
They're continuing forward. So what I've done is we started together, and then I did something, and I did something, but they did something, and they did something, and I did something, and they did something. And now I say, boy, I sure wish I could bring these together. Now, you have two ways to bring them together. I could just say git, while I'm sitting in master, say git merge fire hydrant, and git will attempt to create a new commit called a merge commit that has a parent pointing to both the master's oldest, most recent commit and my most recent commit. And when it gets messy is when there's a conflict there.
Yes.
The other option is to say, okay, well, let me rebase. And so rebasing is just this fancy term for those three commits that I did, pop them off the stack, and let's replay them as if I was just working right now.
Okay.
And so now the line is nice and straight. Some people prefer that. I happen to. Other people don't, because they still want to see the point in time of the work. And so that's where going back to master branch and saying a git merge fire hydrant so that it tries to bring it back across. It's not that it actually brings the commits across. It creates a new commit with two ancestors. So that's the key. It's not that your changes are actually merged. It's just that I'm going to make a commit that points to the two ancestors that brings all the changes on both sides together into one commit. I think those are the two main options. And
okay. So, and again, I haven't committed anything to the central thing. This is all my local repositories.
Oh, yeah. And that's the great thing about it is you're working locally. I haven't done any pushes yet.
Yeah. And then once I'm happy, I'm going to push.
Then
not
you
my
push.
Branch, the other branch. So locally, I have two branches.
Yeah.
I have
your master,
my clone.
And then you have this feature branch.
Yeah.
And then when you're done, you push. And the thing that I like about that is it actually turns out to be really easy to create branches and move that little post-it note around. Right, it's like super simple. Right. So there's been many a time when I've had a little bit of fear, like, you know, I'm not sure what the state of master is right now, so I'm just going to take the state of my master and I'm just going to create a branch called junk. And you got it in your mind. You can't think of it as actually being another branch. That's why I like to say that branches are just little post-it notes. And you just put it on a commit. There could be five of them on the same commit. Git doesn't care. And then let me try something. Oh, no, I didn't like it. Okay, well, let me just grab the post-it note, ball it up, and throw it in the trash. The okay. commits stay in place. And that takes a little getting used to. Developers are just fearful of like, oh, I don't want to delete that branch. I'll lose the history.
Right.
Wait, a branch is just a post-it note. That's all it is. I can pick it up, ball it up, throw it in the trash. And unfortunately, the best way to demonstrate that is visually.
Yeah, no, but I mean, for
here
my
here we are doing a podcast.
But no, remember, we're dealing with the real world. These are problems that people have.
Yes, they are the real problems people have. So,
and I'm more convinced it's because we're still trying to use it like TFS, which
exactly.
ultimately, yes. which is yes. ultimately my first initial problem is. I don't see why we switched because we aren't gaining anything.
Well, if you're not gaining anything because you're not actually leveraging the power of getting distributed source control if you're still using it like a central source control system, right? So the biggest thing is branching. That's why we keep saying branch, right?
Okay. Let's talk about that, okay?
Yeah.
How many projects have you worked on where that is valuable, truly valuable?
All of them? I don't understand the question. You know, like when you know how to use it, when you're able to use it effectively, it is always valuable in any situation. I mean, I even in my projects where I'm the only one, I will still branch off and I'll do spikes, right? I've still gotten in the habit of getting away from committing to master and treating master as that golden copy, even if I'm the only one who's ever going to be committing to that repository.
But you know, Todd, I think you make a really good point. And the point is that, yes, I'm just going to say, it's probably a controversial statement, yes, it's fad-like. It's hype-like. GitHub got massive. Everybody jumped on board. We just all have to be using Git without stopping to say, you know, the TFS style is better for my team. Why did we switch?
Or we need to figure out how to best utilize
think
the tool.
That's wrong. Right. Otherwise, if you're going to use Git, then maybe, unfortunately, you got to abandon the TFS ways, which is, you know, I'm just going to work, and when I'm done, I'm going to merge, and I will let the tool, 99% of the time, maybe 90, maybe 80% of the time, figure out how to bring together what I've done with what's happened since, and I don't want to think about it.
Right.
I just want it to happen.
Right, and what I said earlier was, you know, inevitably, any source control system, you're still going to have merge conflicts, right? If I change one line and Todd changes that same exact line with a different change, that's a conflict no matter what system you're using. However, if you have a smarter system and you change two different lines in the same file, then they can get merged, right, depending on when and how they were changed.
Right. So, you know, there's a question in the chat about, like, and we're talking about this right now, so I wanted to bring it up, is there any tips to avoid conflicts? And so I think that it's going to sound really funny. Well, I'm going to say it's going to sound really funny, right? But the tip to avoid conflicts is to make sure that two developers aren't working on the same thing at the same time, right? So, because
get them out there. Don't keep.
Well, so there's some unavoidable problems here. The classic Visual Studio project file can get touched by so many things. It can get touched just because Jess added a new class and I added a new class.
Yeah, that's a particularly bad example because it's just like randomly add stuff, right?
And we're both, and when you think about it, we're both like, we think we're working in isolation, but because of the CS proj system, that particular file's crap.
Yeah.
You get screwed. Now, you look at the modern CS proj in .NET Core, and the team is specifically going after that,
yeah,
right? Because that situation wouldn't happen in .NET Core 2.0 with the CS proj system, because they've switched from an opt-in, every file is listed, to more of a, you've got to really tell me you don't want a file.
Right. So specifically what you're talking about is if you add a file, it's not even a difference between you and me. If I add a file 1 minute from now,
yep.
Or if I add that same file, you know, forget that, delete that change, close the solution, reopen it again, and add that same file again, it could show up in two different lines. Same name, yep. same change could yep. be on line 20 or it could be on line 30.
Yep.
And it's just not deterministic at all. And yep. so what you're saying is in the new CS proj, they just get away from adding it to the file at all, right? Yeah. Which avoids the change altogether. But even if it was deterministic, that would be much better. Yeah. Right.
So that's one type of conflict. And unfortunately, to answer that part of the question, that's the bad, unavoidable, I'm really sorry, you're fighting Git, right? Yeah. Because the file format isn't like code, where we presume, although not always, we presume that code, if you change line 100 and I change line 100, we should probably have talked.
Yeah.
because clearly, it's either if we didn't talk, then thank heaven that the tool is telling us to talk because we're both changing the same line of code. Now, things happen in source code too. What happens when one of us especially, I'll bet, decides it's time to do some house cleaning
in the factory file. Yep.
And we move a bunch of stuff around, and guess what? Someone else does one minor change in the meantime. That's going to look confusing to Git or any source control system because it's going to say, well, you changed line 99, and you changed 99 lines.
Which happened to include that one line.
I don't know what to do now. So guess what? It's still talking time because this massive refactoring is going along with this simple feature change. So some human is going to have to come in and say, all right, here's how we integrate the small feature change with my massive house cleanup, you know?
Yeah, right. Or before you go through that cleaning, you say, hey, guys,
don't
I'm
going to
be doing this stuff, right? I am never a fan of the don't touch code. Right? That I have been in some places where that was just insane. That happened on a regular basis, and I thought it was just insane because basically whenever you want to say don't touch code, what you really say is work in another branch, right? And those were not environments where that was easily done.
There are other ways to deal with that problem, right? I mean, if I'm working on this set of code, maybe there's something else you can do that's less likely you're going to need to change that code. So,
yeah, right.
There's a human factor involved too.
Right. And it's funny that you know we're having a conversation about a specific source control system, and then the question is, how do you avoid source control conflicts? And
sure.
The answer is
right.
let's take a step back out of source control and talk about your process and your communication in the team.
But
right.
What happens in Git is they're particularly nasty because if you can imagine just a simple scenario of I've branched, I've done a few things, but master has moved on without me, and there's a conflict, and I'm trying to merge them back in, and my instinct was to say, well, I need the work that was done in master so that I can test my work, so let me git merge master, pull master over to feature. You get to a point where you get so kind of spun out of control that's where the instinct to, okay, let me zip this up, move it off to the side, delete, reclone and then use a tool like Beyond Compare to figure out what I did. And bring, I watch this happen because you get tied up in knots in Git. And so that's where I kind of come up with these maxims of, I know you just have to trust me, but don't use stash. And if you type git merge master, stop. And then you're going to say, oh, you know, don't make rules like that. That's ridiculous. But try to live by those two commandments, and then maybe we'll add a few more. And I think what I'm trying to do is kind of guide you to a pit of success where Git will definitely let you do anything you want.
Can I add the first commandment, which is never force push? Can we talk about that?
Yeah, so let's talk about what a force push is, right? A force push is when you have a branch that you have altered to the point that
you're rewriting history.
You couldn't simply merge it back to the central repo, right?
Right.
You've probably rewritten history, or you've removed commits.
Rewritten public history. Rewritten something that has gone out. So we've
already been published.
We keep talking about rewriting history is a good thing.
Yeah.
And it's good on your local machine or your personal branch.
Right.
But when you are rewriting history that other people have already continued working on, now you've completely screwed them.
Right. So a force push is you saying, okay, Git, I'm about to hand you a branch with a series of commits that go backward in time, and I don't care what the state of your branch is, you take mine.
Right. And then Marty McFly starts to fade away.
Right, exactly. Right.
He never existed in the first place.
Yeah. So when is it appropriate to force push? So I have found that early in a project or when you've made a transition from another source control system, and you're kind of trying to get your Git house in order, I have basically told the team, okay, let's all talk about how we wish this repo was, and we'll talk.
Yeah.
And we'll say, like, I really wish we didn't have these four branches. I kind of wish we had a this, and I wish we had a this. Okay, so I'm going to make your wishes come true. And then when I'm done, you're probably just going to want to dump your repo.
Well, that's how it starts, right?
Yeah, I
completely agree. It starts with a conversation, and you say, guys, I'm going to do this. You stop right now and just go ahead and delete your local repos. Just delete them right now, right? Don't even try to do anything while I'm doing this. And I'll let you know when I'm doing it, and then you do a fresh clone. And let's just that's how destructive it is. Don't even try to recover.
That's about the only place for it. I will say that I have on a small team force pushed over branches that I was 99.9 repeating confident that I was the only person who'd pushed up in that branch.
Right. In other words, you weren't going to cause that conflict for anybody else. You weren't going to mess up their day. You weren't going to mess up that commit that they had made on top of what they thought was the latest, which now is not the latest anymore.
Right. So you're right about that. I think that's a good one to add is that, a force push is something you should avoid until you really get to understand the Git commit system and what a branch truly means and things like that. Just don't do it. That's a good one, I think, so, let's think of some other ones. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, no, I mean, I want to get back to the branching, right? Because ultimately, I think the real power, Todd keeps saying, what's the power here? And it is, my simple answer is branching. And so here's my very, very simple.
Let's take a quick time out. So a TFS, I have branching. What is the difference?
So that's what I'm getting to. That's exactly what I'm getting to. So that's the biggest thing, because I came from TFS as well, and Subversion before that, and CVS before that. And all essentially the same when we're having this conversation. They all work the same. Is you have a folder. They're basically folder based, right? And so you have a folder, and then when you branch that folder, you're creating another folder. You're basically just copying that folder and then linking them together with metadata to make it easier to merge them back up, right? That's all you're doing. And then you, in most of these source control systems, including TF, all the three I just mentioned, you literally physically have a new folder on your machine. And so for things like when you're doing IIS sites, you know, back in the day when you had to point your virtual directly to a specific folder and now you wanted to change branches and you wanted to try different stuff, but you wanted to keep pointing that IIS site, keep that IIS virtual directory the same, you would have to move around between the branches to try that out, right? Physically point them to different folders. And now a branch is just a marker in your repository. Your repository is your folder. You have your root folder. You have a folder that is the root of your repository, your Git repository, and all operations happen in there. When you branch, when you change a branch, when you create a branch, it does nothing than just give a name to what is the current commit, the last commit, right? You just give a new name and you say, hey, I'm giving an alias to this thing. You haven't actually done anything yet, right? From then on, that's kind of a tag that you can build on. And so if you make new commits and you make more changes, say add a file or delete a file, then, and you want to switch back to other branches that, let's say, don't have that file, right? You've added a file, and now in your new branch, you've added a file, and then you switch back to that original branch, Git is literally going to make the folder, clean up the folder, right? It's going to make the folder match that old original branch. In this case, it would literally delete that file that you added. It wouldn't physically delete it. It's still there. It's still in the history. It's still in source control. When you switch back to that new branch where you added that file, magically that file is back, right? So basically, but all of these operations are happening in this folder.
So they're just deltas. They're pure deltas.
They're deltas, and they are they're not deltas.
It turns out each commit actually has all the information about the state of your directory at that time.
Right.
That's something that's something that I do dive in depth, like because I've done a couple Git workshops, and I actually spend the first hour I'll let you, I'll try not to spend too long on this, where we take a folder and we create a .git folder, and then we actually start making text files. And if you make enough text files just correctly right, Git starts working. I know that sounds crazy, but the reason I do it is because then people lose fear of I see what a branch really was, because Chris just showed me that all a branch is. It's just a file pointing to a specific commit. It's not even a history of commits. It's just a sticky note that's been slapped on one commit. Well then, how could Git possibly know what the rest of that history is? Well, every Git has parents, so it just starts walking them back. I'm sorry, did I say every Git has parents? Every commit has parents, so it just starts walking them back. And the reason I do that is just to kind of remove that fear, but it's to Jess's point that, a branch is not what it is in PFS, which is a physical copy of the files. It's really just, let me just go write on another post-it note and slap it in the same spot. The convention, however, is that since I'm on this new branch, when I commit, then Git says, okay, let me create the commit, point it back to the current head, what the branch is pointing to, then pick up the sticky note and move it up one. And that's literally what it does. It just picks it up right off the board and moves it up one. You could do all this physically, so that you get a good understanding of what the system is doing.
Right. And so going back to moving away from TFS into Git, is that's the fundamental change, right? Is that branches are different. They're not physical copies. Therefore, right off the bat, they are just easier. They're quicker, right? You can move these sticky notes around much more quickly than you can copy a file, a folder with hundreds of files or thousands of files in it, right? So just from a pure file system standpoint, they're far quicker. It's milliseconds versus seconds or possibly even minutes, right? So now that's easier. And now when it comes time to merge them back together, you're replaying changes and merging those changes, right? You're not actually trying to figure out the differences between these files. Between different files, right? You're in Subversion, in TFS, you're basically taking Beyond Compare and comparing these two folders to see what the changes are and then merging them, versus Git, where you're actually replaying change by change and reconciling each of those changes. And generally, when you replay history like that, if you don't have true commits, meaning, Todd and I literally changed the same line to different things, outside of those actual true commits, they generally just replaying things in order of history that they were done just reconciles most differences right off the bat.
Yeah. So one thing that I have noticed
easier and helps with merging, that's really what that means.
one thing I have noticed in people's behavior, if they get used to Git, and it's important, they have to get used to Git, is have you ever seen in TFS or in Subversion the developer who says, hey, I'm almost done with this, but I'm not ready to commit it yet? Because, you know, if they were to commit it and it's half done, breaks the build. And sure, we have branches to allow you to say, well, why aren't you working on that branch, right? The reason I'm not working on that branch is because I actually haven't finished what I'm working on. I've only kind of finished like this method, or maybe I've even fixed this line of code. So I don't want to commit it and have all these commits. And then it'll look funny when I merge it back in. Like the history is going to be full of like, of me just like at making a line change at a time. Well, if I'm on my own local feature branch, I can fearlessly commit that feature branch for any reason, including just that I'm getting up to go to the bathroom. And I could even make the commit message be like, heck yeah, I figured out data set. And the reason why I'm willing to do that and to have like 20 commits is that, and this is, again, I'll tell you, this is a little advanced thing, is that I'm willing to then say, okay, I'm done with this body of work, but before I present it to my colleagues, they don't want to see a bunch of commits that say, heck yeah, or whoops, I screwed up, or better not try that again, or whatever. Now I can use the, unfortunately, it's the same term. I can use the rebase command again and do what's called an interactive rebase and go through that history, my own local work, and say, well, these four commits, I want to put them together, and then I want to change the commit message to make it very descriptive, and then I want this one, I'm going to change its commit message so that it's very clear what I did here, and you know what? I didn't actually explain this very well the first time, so let me fix that commit message up, and now I have a nice, clean presentation, a gift to my team that I will merge back in.
Even forget about that, right? If you're talking about a branch where you're using to isolate a kind of unit of work, an idea that you're working on, when you finally finish that idea, do you really even care about that 10 or 20 or 30 commits? Even squashing them down to 4 or 5 or 6,
right?
Many people think, well, let's just make one commit, right? And yes, that is the feature being merged in, and that's all right. That really matters. Nobody really cares about those 20 steps that went into it.
Right.
And, I mean, I think to your point, you're saying there might be a couple of milestones within those 20 commits that were kind of meaningful and may be interesting in retrospect in the history of everything. But even then, really, like if the feature's done.
There are some teams who believe that every commit and master should be a shippable version of the product.
Oh, absolutely. No,
believe that, and they work towards that goal. And so,
I'm completely down with that.
To Jess's point, you might be going off on this tangent, but you will squash it all down into the gift to the product. You will merge it into master, and that is a shippable piece of code.
So perfect segue. Let's talk about now these Git branching models that have come on top of this, right? So we've been throwing out all these very technical terms, rebasing and merging and all this stuff. Let's take that up a little bit and just kind of talk about branching. And so there are a couple of main models, very popular models that are out there. I think arguably the most popular, at least most widely used, just because a lot of open source projects use it, is the GitHub flow, where you are making a branch. Most of the time you're making a fork in your local repository. So the difference between a branch and a fork, I get asked this a lot, is really relevant to when you are using a centralized system like GitHub or Bitbucket, you know, particularly for open source projects, where you're not just creating a branch in the repository, you're actually creating a whole new clone of that repository, a personal copy of that repository, and doing all of your work in there, ideally in a new branch in there.
And more importantly, that fork is also in the cloud.
That fork is in the cloud. Yeah. So you're doing this on GitHub servers per se, right? So if I want to make a change, let's take an example. If I want to make a change to the Angular project,
right,
I will fork it, which means I will tell GitHub to fork it, which means GitHub will basically create a clone of it on their servers and then assign that to my folder, my directory, and my username.
But you'll be the god of it.
Right. And so now
you have absolutely no permission in Angular. Right. You have zero.
Right. Right. And so then I could, from a technical standpoint, I could go and rewrite all the history I wanted, right? If I try to merge it back, it's going to be hell to pay.
Yeah. Not really they won't keep your pull request. Yeah. Right. So who cares?
From a technical standpoint, I could do that. So now, I have my branch. I have my branch, right? Whether that's in a fork, a separate fork, or in the current repo, it doesn't matter, right? I have my branch where I'm working on, and then when I am done, when I finish that feature, when I'm ready for it to go back into that thing that I branched off of in the first place, let's call it master for the sake of it, I then submit what's called a pull request. And so this pull requests are not actually anything having to do with Git, the source control system. Pull requests are features that are provided by these online hosts, yeah. Right? Like GitHub and
GitHub sort of perfected the process and everybody's copied it essentially.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically. And what the pull request says is, oh, okay. Now let's take the case of the fork, right? I've created a copy of this. I've made some changes. And I want to bring the changes in my fork, my copy of this repository and my branch in that copy. I want to bring it back into the master, your master, Angular master. And you're literally requesting, can you pull my changes in? Right. And in the UI, the committer or the owner of that original repository can go through and they can use all the tools online to kind of review the request, maybe make some comments and stuff. And maybe you go back and forth. Maybe you make a couple more commits on that branch and they just show up in the pull request. When everybody's happy, the committer, the owner of that repository, that original repository, clicks the merge button and says, good, go ahead. And then GitHub or whatever goes and merges those in and brings those changes into the original repository. And now you've made a commit into the Angular repository. Have I explained that correctly? Is that your understanding?
Yeah, generally that makes sense.
Yeah. Right. That's so, basically. And it's important.
Do you guys have anything to add?
Well, yeah, it's important for open source because it's a technique that allows me to run a very important open source project with hundreds of contributors and give none of them permission.
It's basically why Git was committed. It was created.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, Linus Torvalds created it to enable that to enable the development of the Linux kernel.
Right. Although his version of patching and pull requests is different from what GitHub did, and he kind of frowned on it. He's like, you know, it's not really the way I did it. But the GitHub was trying to solve an additional problem, where Linus's issue was, I need a system where I can trust a subset of people, my direct report, so to speak, and I'll let them trust who they want, and I'll let them trust who they want, and so when I get patches from the people I trust, I will feel much more confident in just pulling them in. Whereas the GitHub model is more like, I have no idea who you are, and I don't have time to vet you. But if you want to submit a little bit of code, and we're responsible enough to take a quick peek at the changes, which is why GitHub provides, and Bitbucket and all of them provide all of the views of diffs and everything, so you can quickly scan and say, what did you do? What did you do? What did you do? Okay, I will take that change even though I don't know who you are. I'm not giving you permission into our repo, and you can go on your merry way, and I never have to see you again. Maybe, right? You can come back, sure.
But your change looks good.
But your change looks good, and I want to take it without having to just do a ton of security housekeeping.
Right. And so that model works perfectly well on your development team at work, right? The fact that you're not in the public, the fact that you're not even using GitHub, as long as you're using something that does offer the pull request model, which is, I have not come across a system that doesn't, right? I've used TFS. I've used the Git support in TFS.
Right. They don't GitLab, all have forks.
Bitbucket, GitHub. Yeah, right. They may not have forks, or they may not have it enabled.
But you can still pull requests between branches in the same repo. It's no big deal.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. So the branch, the fact that you're doing it in a separate complete clone, aka a fork, or just right there in the same repo, is basically irrelevant to the process of it, right? And so you can use that in your development team to isolate changes, to institute a peer review system, right? That pull request is essentially a peer review request. Can you please look at these changes? And then someone else is going to say okay and click that merge button to bring them in to that main trunk, that main branch, the master branch, right? To actually get them into that shippable product. And so it's a very good process to get in place to help out with the peer reviews. So now the other the other model that I've seen in use in a lot of places is the Git Flow model that I mentioned earlier. And so this starts out with this. This might be very difficult to explain on a podcast, but I'll try.
Like Atlassian has a whole. Atlassian's actually kind of famous for having that whole tutorial page.
Yeah.
Even though I think we should provide links, I wouldn't be surprised at all if you just search Atlassian Git Flow, and here I am going directly to the comparing workflow site that they have where they compare these different workflows.
Oh, sure. And likewise, GitHub Flow, if you Google that, it's in GitHub Docs.
Directly to GitHub Docs, yeah.
Yep. No, it's great. And we'll include links in the show notes to those. But basically, I'll try to walk through it. So everything starts with the master. I mean, when you create a Git repo, that's the branch that's created. It's called master, and everything starts up with that. And Git Flow shares with GitHub Flow the similar idea that master is golden. Master is production ready. Master is just, that is the golden copy, the pure copy, the thing that is the most stable. And then you branch off from there to kind of isolate your changes. You said it earlier, Todd, right? It's all about isolating your changes. And so you start off with commit number one or branch number one is right off of master, that new fresh master. You create a develop branch right away. And that develop branch is where the active work goes into or the active integration goes into. A lot of teams will not even commit directly into that develop branch. They will say that all work has to happen in feature branches off of that develop branch. So now we're two steps away removed from master. And that's by design, right? It sounds complex. And especially if you go and see some of the diagrams of this, especially if you see the end
state.
There's
a famous blog post. All you have to do is search for a successful Git branching model, and you will see this famous blog post with dots and six layers of branches, and they're all it's telling you how you go feature branches and development branches and hotfix branches and release branches and then your master branch.
Right. And so you have to go all the way back to the beginning and start where I'm starting, right? At the beginning of time, the origin of master, the origin of time, the Big Bang, right? And then from there, develop. You introduce develop. And what is develop? That is the integration branch, right? That is where all of your changes are integrated when they're almost ready to go into master, when they're being stabilized for master. And then from there, your active work happens in yet another branch off of that, which are your feature branches, which is not a name. That's just a generic name for any number of branches that you want, right? And so now you do that work in your feature branches. And then you can, let's say you commit a pull request in order to get those changes back into develop. And so what I just described there is actually a little mini GitHub flow that's happening between develop and those feature branches, right? Exactly the same interaction. Then once it's in develop, the reason for develop, again, is because you're not putting it right directly into master. You're basically creating a buffer. So now when you're ready and you want to get into master, you don't merge right into master. You create something else that's called a release branch. And that's where you do all of your hardening, your bug fixing, bug fixes only, right? You shouldn't ever really be committing into this branch. And when you are, it is just very focused bug fixes for the purpose of stability and hardening of that thing. And basically turning a release candidate into a releasable product and eventually a release product. And so finally, at the end of this whole thing, when you've improved that release branch enough that you're ready to go into production, you put it into production at the same time you merge it into master. And therefore, going back to what Chris said way back in the beginning of the show, every commit in master represents a published, a deployed published version of the application in production. There's a one-to-one correlation.
Okay.
And then rinse and repeat.
Okay. So in your world, what you just described, there'd only ever be one master. There'd only ever be one release folder.
There's only ever one master and one develop, and they are long lived for the entire life of the repository. They start at the beginning of the repository and they live forever. These release branches, you create them for each release, and then each release branch dies. But yes, when you are ready to go and for the next release, you create a new release branch, and there is only ever one release branch.
unless you have to support multiple versions of the software, then.
No.
Yeah, so here's what it looks like, actually, if you can see. I don't know if I can if you can lock.
It looks like a game of freaking backgammon or right, something.
So this I mean, I'm not trying to, and I won't dwell on this. I won't dwell on it because people are listening on radio, so to speak. But
it's a great picture. There's pink and yellow and orange and purple.
This is the blog post: a successful Git branching model. It's famous. It's world famous, right? Yeah. And I'm not a fan.
Real famous, but you're not a fan. So no, let's talk to Ruby just about that. So let's say you have multiple versions to shipped versions out there, like Windows, right? Windows has update one, update two. You'd still only have one release branch?
Update one, update two. Well, no. So you have basically the thing. So the release branch is the thing that is going live next.
Next, okay.
Then the develop branch is the thing that's going live after that. And then after in the future is in feature branches somewhere.
Okay, that's so I've released version one.
That's in the Git flow model, right?
Yes.
I released version one, right? That's in TFS terms, normally we create a release branch. Now I have release two, and I want to keep both around. Can I do that? Or you're saying don't do that?
Well, in this model, you would do that.
You wouldn't keep the release branch around, that because going back to the point of you never lose history, right? Deleting a branch does not delete the commits. It does not delete the history. The thing is still there. The release is still there. And the fact that you brought it into master and optionally even tagged it with that specific like version number or something, that means it's always there. You can always go back to it.
To Todd's point, the Git flow workflow that we are talking about, there would be a branch called 1.0. You would release on it, and then you would hotfix and bug fix on it, and you would have to marshal those commits back over to develop or master or whatever the heck craziness.
Yeah.
And they would be separate. There would be a release branch 2 and a release branch 3 and feature branch 1 and 2 and 3. And I feel like, and you know, look, I'm just going to, you know what, I'm going to put a stake in the ground. I think it is Git for people who miss Subversion and TFS.
I don't like it.
It's good for people who have to support parallel releases. That's exactly what it's for.
But you could support parallel releases, assuming that you have one code base. You don't have to go have some release branch to put 1.0 out. I only need my one branch. Only when somebody says to me...
Yeah, sure, you don't. No, you don't have to. Sure. You don't need the release branch.
Yeah, the only time that I need to start diverging is when you make a good business case for we have to make a fix that's based on a commit further back, and we're not bringing that commit back up.
So that's a hot fix, right? And that is also taken into account in the Git flow model. So now we're talking about a hot fix, which is in addition to everything that we just said. This is one of those really we're on 2.0, 3.0, right? Where we've moved on. We found out that customers are running 1.0 and they report a bug. I need
security, whatever.
So I go back into master in my 1.0 and I branch directly off of master to create a hotfix branch from exactly the release that they are working on, make a targeted fix, commit that into back into that hotfix, and then when I'm ready with that hotfix branch, I merge that branch and those commits into both master to produce the 1.1. And I also merge it back up into develop to make sure that that fix is there for everything else.
Right. You so branch directly from the commit, basically.
Yes. So
which there, you can do.
Yes.
So there, to me, is an advantage. Because in my experience working with TFS and other systems, you end up – that becomes a nightmare. Because you end up with all these extra release folders. And then if you need to make a fix, you have even more and more branches to deal with.
Yes. I mean, you can kind of do this with tags and labels in TFS, right? You can label a commit in TFS as a release. And, you know,
most people end up creating release one folder, release two folder. And then if you have to make a fix, you're basically merging in. You're trying to like, okay, can I put this here? Can I put this here? Can I put that there?
So exactly. Let's talk about some practical advice, right? And this is my advice. This is what I like. And I have found that I actually like what's called trunk-based development. It's another thing that you can kind of Google up for. And in this model, you essentially try to live in one branch with very short-lived feature branches that you use just purely because you want to isolate the work you're doing this week. Now, that's not to say that you might not have to diverge for the reasons Jeff has pointed out. Jess has pointed out, because, you know, 1.0 needs some kind of security patch that's not going to get brought up to 3.0 because, oh my gosh, we've changed the software so much since then. Okay, that's reasonable. But I tend to like using tags as my stakes in the ground, my points in time of this was 1.0, everybody. This is what it was. This commit right here. And I don't want to move those tags. I don't want to change those tags. That's the stake in the ground.
That's what GitFlow does. GitFlow gives you those markers every single time you merge into
batches. Because if you read the post about GitFlow, the branches don't get thrown away.
They do. The only thing that doesn't get thrown away are master and developer.
I'm looking at the posts. I feel like you have modernized GitFlow.
No. The branches get
thrown
away.
When I look,
the feature branches get thrown away. The hotfix branches get thrown away. The release branches get thrown away. The only thing that is evergreen, that lives forever, is master and develop.
So,
I guess I don't even care about develop, to be honest with you.
So it's all about isolating changes, right? It's all about that buffer and getting further and further removed from production. When you consider, for me, master is production, right? I always tell developers, whenever you are committing into master, whether it's through a pull request, a merge, whatever it is, whenever a commit gets into master, pretend that's literally putting that code into production, right? Because if you have your CI and CD pipeline set up properly, it literally does mean that, right? And so working back from there is, okay, I don't want all of my commits to go to production, which is what happens in that trunk-based model. That's very hard to do. I'm not going to say it's insane.
Oh, no, it is.
It's incredibly hard to do to the point where, like, the vast majority of teams can't do it. Myself included,
yeah,
right?
And here's the other thing about it. It requires your software to be written a certain way.
Exactly.
Most current software isn't, because in order for you to do trunk-based development, you're going to need to go like with a feature flag model.
Yeah. Yep.
Right. Where you can basically, I can add something to the software, but turn it off by default until the team is ready to turn it on. And that's exactly what the trunk-based, you know, development website will talk about.
Right. Well, and quite frankly, the thing that scares me the most is not even the technical issue. It's and not even understanding the model or anything. It's just accidentally turning a feature flag on or off, or enabling it for a certain set of users or whatever, right? Like using it in exactly the way that it is intended to be used, but accidentally in enabling or disabling a certain set of users, because people are human and they make mistakes, right?
Yeah.
So let's kind of circle back a little bit. So Jess, you make some good arguments. So in your practical day-to-day world, is this working what you just described, or is there still challenges? Are your developers still facing the same challenges that Chris and I have talked about?
Many of my projects deal with they use a variation of the GitHub flow because they don't have that need for multiple parallel releases.
Okay.
When I have multiple teams working on a code base and one team is working on something for this coming release and then the other team or teams are working for something further out in the future, then it is working very well. And I will say that with the big caveat that we've only recently started using it, right? So I don't have a long history to draw from, but so far it's been working very well.
And these feature branches, is this kind of as the team needs them? Or is it kind of planned out?
Both. So if you really want to get mature and you want to kind of track the whole life cycle and go back to the beginning of saying, let's track the work item and, you know, create rally user stories or something like that, whatever your work item management system is, and then you can track those through, you can actually say, let's say a feature branch is literally an agile feature, a rally feature, right? And you can track it that way. And you can say, this is all of the work to implement this agile feature.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, again,
it's pretty cool. I think it's pretty powerful.
So how about you, Chris? Do you feel like people still having pain or?
Yes. I think that it is very, it's hard to let go of a few things, and these, they're different things for different people. For one thing, I think there are going to be some developers who they view source control as the history of time of work, and they like that. They want to know that you checked in a defect, quite frankly, because you checked in something that was wrong and had to be fixed, and that somebody else came along and fixed it. Where and I'm talking before release, not between releases. And one of the things that I've kind of come to the conclusion of, having been someone who dealt with Visual Source Safe and that world of like, of not only is the history sacred, I locked the file away from the rest of the world just to work on it, right? We've come a long way from those days. And I've kind of come to the conclusion that source control, I don't actually care about the history of the work. I care about the history of the releases. Like, that's more important to me. I definitely want to be able to point at this spot in the source control tree and say, okay, this right here is what we shipped. We shipped these bits. And I know for sure that we shipped these bits. And I think that... So sometimes there's that struggle. The other struggle that I see is, you know, it's just difficult to learn all of these verbs of rebasing and merging and fast forwarding and what's a fast forward merge versus a merge commit. And people just want to get their work done. So they type, they go, well, let me just try git merge whatever.
That's totally fair. I mean, I've been using it for at least 5 years now, and I would consider myself an advanced user, and I'm still not entirely sure what a fast forward is versus a regular, right. You know, like,
yeah, sure. I get it.
And I'm fine. I don't need to.
Yeah. I totally get it too. And it's frustrating. And I'm even willing to say, just because I've taken the time to really understand it, right? Like, the fact of the matter is it's super frustrating to the point that I even kind of throw up my hands and say, like, maybe this is just too complicated. I'm willing to make that admission, you know?
Yeah. You know what? My favorite, my absolute favorite site is Think Like a Git. I'm gonna bring this up right now. Think Like a Git. And so in here, the tagline is Git shouldn't be so hard to learn. And it's a tutorial. You walk through it. And in the beginning, it says, it has a couple of quotes of, Git isn't so hard if you think about it as X. And one of them is, Git isn't so hard if you just realize that it's just graph theory.
Right. Yeah. Right. I make this joke too where I say, it's just a directed acyclic graph. What's the problem? Right? and I totally get how that's funny. But right. Then believe it or not, when I did the Git workshop, I had fought the temptation to explain what I just said in my 1 hour presentation. And then I realized, no, I think I'm going to go ahead and explain it. And I kind of got some feedback from people telling me, in fact, 6 months later, a gentleman who came up and said, hey, I was in that Git class and I'm glad you explained the nitty gritty because now I feel like I really know what I'm doing. But isn't that kind of the bad thing too?
That you have
like
to
look how technical you had to become
in
order to feel comfortable with the right way to merge and what I really want to do here, and is this going to cause a fast forward? Because I'll tell you, I'm Mr. Fast Forward. I love fast forward merges. I think they're clean. I think they're understandable. When I see a commit graph that kind of goes every which way, and then somebody asks you, so what happened? What did we do 3 releases ago? Well, I'm not sure. You know, it's complicated and I hate that and unfortunately I'm not saying that that's a problem with the team or the developers. It's the tool, right? The tool is not straightforward. It's the source control tool Linus built for Linus, and guess what? Yeah. He served Linus's needs.
Right.
Well, yeah,
Linus Torvalds, right?
He didn't. He would have. I mean, he did that with Linux, right? He created Linux for that. So yeah. I guess my concern, wrapping back up my thoughts, is to me it feels like if you're not all in, it may be the wrong tool for you. Like, if you're not going to adopt the Git approach. Like Git way, if you're just going to use it as source control, then it doesn't buy you much. And it feels like people are adopting this because it's, like I said, there's a cool factor. If you don't, like the whole team doesn't buy into the process, to me it seems like you're just going to cause more chaos. And that to me has been my greatest fear since the first time I ever worked with Git years ago was I'm been in environments where people didn't even get source control per se. And there's 30 or 40 developers, and they're all told, when you've got something done, check it in. And they want it to be as easy as possible. If it's just simply, I hit a button and it's in, it requires more thinking, it requires opening another tool, going to command line. There's all this, like, I'm not going to do it. I'll only check in once a month or something, which totally, to me, defeats the purpose of having – defeats other processes that you want to have, which is continuous integration and other things. So I guess to me is – I mean, for me, from a personal point of view, is I feel like there's still so much to learn, which is why I'm asking the questions I'm asking. But to me is I can't do that in a vacuum. I got to get the whole team to buy into this concept. Because if I'm just working in the Git way in my own little vacuum and everyone else is still doing it the TFS way, then there's really probably not a benefit.
Oh, sure, right. And especially if you start bringing in these like branching models like I'm talking about, it's not like you could be using GitFlow and the rest of your team can be using GitHub Flow in the same repo. Like, that just won't work.
I mean, we talked about the stash model was, I'm like, you know, every time I have to do a merge, I have this problem. Like, well, I just stash. And I'm like, okay, sure, that sounds like a great idea.
Yeah.
Well, every time I do it, I'm like, this feels like it's just I'm fighting the tool.
Well, I think you are using the tool wrong. But so
But that's the idea, though, is most people, they don't go learn graph theory. They don't even learn about source control or even understand branching. They live in their little world. They want to check code in, and it's someone else's job to worry about when the release branch gets created. It's someone else's job to worry about if they can replay history. Most people don't need that functionality per se. They just have to check things in and build it.
Well, I don't know if I completely agree that if you are not using the features, then there's no reason to use Git, right? That could be pretty much said of any technology or source control system. But then my question is, well, why aren't you, right? Because there is a lot of power there, and there are some things that are relatively, and I use that term strongly, relatively easy to learn and get to know, right? That may take you a little while to get up to speed on them, but once you get it, it's pretty straightforward. And so even something as simple as just doing all of your work in a separate branch and then using pull requests to get it in there and kind of force a peer review to happen as part of your process, like it's pretty simple, pretty straightforward, doesn't require a whole lot of learning, and certainly doesn't require knowing graph theory to do that. And that's where you can kind of almost get away with how I started off the show, which is, okay, well, it's just like TFS with the commits, except you commit locally and then push, right? You start from there, you add a couple more concepts, like, well, now you're creating a branch and you can merge these branches with a pull request and everything, but all that's pretty straightforward. And avoid all of the rebasing and all of that as much as possible. What do you say, Chris? Is that completely unrealistic?
Just don't get merge master. Just don't do it.
I want to criticize Jess for a little while or for a minute on this thing is you sound like it's panacea. And I haven't seen that in the real world. Everywhere I've been where people have tried to use this, it seems like it causes more pain than it solves.
Well, so we're getting better in some of the projects I've seen. I've seen the ASP.NET team use it very effectively. Obviously, the teams that maybe aren't so Microsoft-based, you know, they're looking at us like, what's the problem here, right? Let me tell you a feature that I really do like about it is, as I really do like these commit hashes, and I'm serious about this because the commit hash is this immutable thing, right? You can be confident that if you somehow pack the hash of a commit, pack it in with the executables and the artifacts that you're creating, then you can always look at the artifact and say, wait a second, I know exactly the code that was used to create this. Even though Git's malleability is well known, you could move branches around, you could delete commits, you could rewrite history. That's all great. But I know which commit produced this product. So to that end, I've even seen teams use their CI tool to actually embed the hash in the product versioning.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. That's what, yeah.
So it'll say like 1.1.1 dash.
Yeah.
You know, and then the hash.
Yeah, absolutely.
So like, and I love that. I personally, and I'm not saying that you can't do this with other systems. I just, this is the first time I was introduced to that idea of a direct pointer to source control, that even if somebody like Jest went in there and Git force pushed all around it and moved branches, and somebody even moved the tag, like some nefarious person picked up the 1.1 tag and put it somewhere else, it doesn't matter, because I could say, no, that 1.1 tag isn't pointing to the hash that this binary has embedded in the versioning. That's crap. Where is that? And you know for sure.
Yeah.
So I really like that about Git, even though it has nothing to do with anything else we talked about today. I like that piece. And it kind of leads into where we're going with this discussion, which is packaging and versioning, I think, in a future show.
Yep.
But I like that piece of Git right there, and I wanted to make sure we got that in.
No, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, the immutability of it is pretty amazing. And the fact that we didn't even touch on this, I'm amazed. It goes along with it that if you lose that pointer because things like branches are just pointers to the latest commit in a series of commits. If you lose that commit, if you lose that pointer, the commit is still there.
For a while.
Yeah, and you can, right, until a garbage collection happens.
Right.
It's there, right? And you can have orphan commits. You can accidentally lose. You can delete branches, which seems like a very destructive thing, but all you're really deleting is the pointer. You may have to go do some work to actually find those, find that commit, but it's there.
Yeah.
It doesn't go away.
All you have to do is say git branch, the name of the temp branch you want to make, and the commit hash.
Yeah.
And you will create a new sticky note. And I always like to use that term with my colleagues. I will intentionally avoid the term branched because I want to drill into them. It's just a post-it note.
Yeah.
That's all it is, right?
Yeah.
Just a pointer.
So Todd, I will, going back to your, you're accusing me of calling it a panacea. I'll use an example of other teams that I've seen. Not even my team, another team that is not related to me, not influenced by me at all. And this is in the enterprise where we have very serious rules and regulations, especially about source code in specific, right? Where it must be in enterprise approved systems so that we have auditability and all this stuff.
Yeah.
These teams wanted to use Git so badly that they created their own server. They used an open source version of GitHub. It's called Gogs. It's Gitia now. It's a very, very cool project. And basically they install their own locally hosted version of internal GitHub on their own servers, completely breaking all of these rules and knowing it, right? It was worth the risk to them because they loved Git so much and they love this model so much and this way of interacting and collaborating, right? And I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah. Now, I'm sure we've missed a lot of nuances, but, maybe we can help some listeners here.
So what you're saying is you have to find a bunch of people who already love Git and go work with them, as opposed to a bunch of people who are just like, it's just source control.
These people hadn't used Git 6 months earlier. It's not – they just learned it, and they loved it.
They bought into the concept, right?
They're using it. Yeah, they're using it the right way. Of course, to your point, if you're just using it like TFS, and you're not actually taking advantage of the features it gives, then why bother? Why bother learning? But when you actually spend just a little bit of time to learn it, like you could pick it up in, let's say, a couple of weeks, let's say a couple of months to be generous, right? It takes you a couple of months to learn it if you really try and get in there and are using it and figuring out these different features and everything. You can get a pretty solid grasp. You can certainly be productive within a couple of weeks and not be making stupid mistakes. And you can get a very, very solid deep grasp of it within a couple of months, certainly. So, anything else?
Wow, we talked a while about
this. Is almost an hour and a half.
Well, it's the real world, right? I mean, the real world is much messier than what's in a doc.
It is. And so, you listener, if you're still listening, if you've made it this far, what do you think about Git? Do you have any particular approaches, like the Git flow model, or any other branching models, or any other way that you use it? Or do you have any golden rules, or tips, or tricks that you use that we didn't mention? We'd love to know. please leave a comment on the website, staticvoidpodcast.com, or send an email to comments@staticvoidpodcast.com. And as always, if you have a topic you'd like us to discuss on the show, please feel free to let us know through those same channels. Was there something on this show that you wish we'd gone deeper on? We want to make sure that we are talking about the things that you want to hear about. Chris, Todd, thanks for the chat.
Yeah.
Thank you, guys.
And thank you, listener, for spending the time with us. We hope that you enjoyed it, and we look forward to seeing you next time on the Static Void Podcast.